So welcome everyone to our webinar today. Dr. Ofer-Zur will be presenting on how to create a thriving fee-for-service private practice outside of managed care, despite the economy and all the things we've been hearing about since 2008's recession. As today's a good day, given the stock market is in another one of its tailspins, Dr. Zur, to give us some advice on this important topic. Mel and I know that many people have a desire to have a fee-for-service practice outside of managed care, but I've been finding it more difficult to do so. So take it away and enlighten us all.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Mel. The excuses that therapists have used over the years just vary from the stock market to people don't have money to people don't value us. So excuses. So I think the recession is really irrelevant to everything we are talking about today, because just therapists use this as an excuse. People are still doing their breast augmentation as we speak. They do cosmetic surgeries. They are probably, as we speak, 10, 15 million people paid for pornography by this morning. And if you look outside the window, people driving pretty nice cars here in the United States, so in this regard, all over the world. We just came back from Europe. So, and relatively, what we are asking in our practices is really not at the level of houses, so even luxury car or cosmetic surgery. And we are at the level what people can afford. And you go to the mall, you do see women still buying medics and buying jewelry and buying clothes. So I'll go beyond the excuses and try to help people overcome this reason that they have why they don't have a fee-for-service. I've been lecturing about fee-for-service since the early 90s, and thousands of therapists have converted to get out of managed care, did not waste their time with so many immoral and unfair and unjust and unhelpful systems that most managed care, not all of them. And to act really freely and to pursue our vocation, to pursue our calling without being controlled and managed. So I really don't care what the stock market is, and I think the recession of 2008 has affected the people I've trained as well as my practice. So let's take a dive and see kind of what it takes. A quick note, if you go to the ZurInstitute.com, you'll find a whole bunch of material. The online marketing guide will not be out until a couple of weeks. My daughter is finishing it. We have a 10% discount code at UCPAA. So let's see what does it take to become a successful therapist. We'll start with five major areas of characteristic of successful therapist. When you do therapy, when you conduct therapy, the most important thing that people would like to have a connection with us. That means they want to see an emotionally healthy person that would like you to be appropriate. Somebody in the session or in the first call will say something and you say, what did he say that? Be flexible. Sometimes clients would like to go on a walk and talk. Sometimes they would like a home visit. And so be flexible with them. Whether if they want to meet in their home, I think it's very often can be very therapeutic, very clinically appropriate, so do that. And show up, be a full person. I think as we move into the 21st century, an increased demand on us to be more transparent and more to show up. And this is kind of part of what happened with changes with the internet that I'll talk later on. So we're talking about the first characteristic is got to be personal. Then we're moving is to run a fee-for-service private practice is really running a small business. You need to learn, and that's not anything we learn at school, how to manage time, money, how to do billing. If you don't are not comfortable with any of that, always doing your marketing, just hire somebody. We are not used to run a business. We are not used to run a marketing campaign. And I must admit, until a few months ago, I didn't even have a QuickBooks. I thought that QuickBooks is an animal running in the savannas in Africa. And so I finally, 30 years later, I have finally a QuickBooks accounting system. And again, I wasn't trained in school to have any accounting system. So I got somebody to do that, and it took them a total of a couple of weeks to convert me to a QuickBooks. So you get help. That means you pay for help, part of running a business. You need to have the kind of the personality for that. I just spent 3 weeks in Israel and in Greece and in Crete, and this was the time that the money for my private practice didn't flow in. So you need, it's kind of a package deal to have the kind of the personality for that. That you sometimes you won't make money on vacation, so it's kind of a personality of running a small business. We can talk more about it, but at least you need to think, is it for me? When it comes to clinical skills, you need to make a decision or to know what mode you are working with. So if you decide to be a generalist, you really need to learn how to work with people with two principles. How to work with people, intermittent long-term therapy. That means you see people over the long term. And you need to learn how to work outside the DSM. So when you work with people on issues of love and relationship and parenting and aging, it's not, you barely have a diagnosis. You may not even have a diagnosis. You just have a focus of treatment, and you don't need to have a diagnosis to be within the standard of care. So I'm right now almost 30 years in practice, and there are people that I've been seeing for a quarter century. I've seen them as a couple, and then they got divorced, and I saw them with the new partners, and the new partners and them have babies, and then I saw the parents, when the parents moved to old people's home, and then the brother died, so they'll come in and out in a 25-year period. They'll come in and out therapy without big deal of terminations, without a big commotion about termination and restarting. It's coming in and out, and I teach them how to identify that sometimes they just need a tune-up. The models that I use for the intermittent long-term life issues is either the dentist, where we do check up on our teeth on a regular basis, the mechanic, where we change the oil before the car broke, before the engine stops. So it's a preventative way to do intermittent long-term therapy. You can imagine reduce your need for marketing because you're working with the same group of people and their parents and their children. Now I see actually the children of the clients that I started 20 years ago. And now I see even one family in three generations. They'll come together and they'll come separate into the therapy session. So now the grandchildren are actually in therapy, not because they are broken, just because to have a coach about how to live their life in a meaningful and healthy way. So the DSM has become pretty irrelevant to this kind of work. Not that I'm a great believer in the DSM. I think most of it is just a scam by the pharmaceutical companies making money. But there's some validity to some aspects of the DSM, but generally it's just a moneymaker for some kind of companies, the pharmaceutical companies and psychiatric industry. And so I'm working with people with issues of love, parenting, aging, major illness, depression, anxiety, and issue of existential meaning and death throughout their lives, throughout what is the issues of the calling and vocation. So get training in positive psychology, get training in a basic way of dealing with anxiety and depression and existential psychology as well as relationships, and you can do this work. If you just put your mind to that, educate yourself, and then educate the clients. Then, if you choose to have a different approach, rather than a generalist, you can become a specialist, and then they are not conflicting with each other. And then you need to choose what population or market. Are you going to do mediation? Are you going to do eating disorder, PTSD, abuse, ADHD, blah, 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 whatever it is. Choose a market. You learn how to penetrate it.
Are you saying you could have fee-for-service with generalist or specialist?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now I have the internet addiction part kind of coming into my practice more, and I see it as a fee-for-service. When parents are freaked out about the children use of Facebook, YouTube, pornography, gaming, and they'll pay. I mean, they'll pay without a blink. But I also see people throughout their lives around issues of relationships, life, death, transition, caretaking of parents, etc. So you could do it, but you need to know what mode you are working with, because the marketing would be different for different mode, and because you are targeting the population in a different way. Not the difference, but you can act differently on both ways.
Yeah, Ofer, someone's asking, is it more lucrative to be a specialist or a generalist?
It's the same. If you're good, you can make the $250,000 a year full time, or whatever you want to get close to at this day and age. Either way, it's a good question. It depends how you come into personality. Some people just cannot hold the big picture very well, and some people just lack the specificity and the expertise that come in one area. So it's really, either way, it's fine. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, someone else had asked, is it feasible to be both a generalist and a specialist? Like, can you have one or two specialty areas and the rest of your practice be generalist?
Absolutely. That's what I have. I mean, I have definitely a generalist, and then I have different specialties as well. I could have many specialties as well as being a generalist.
Someone else asked, is it harder to market yourself as a generalist?
It's different. It's different, not harder. Let's go, what about the next aspect of successful therapy? Number four, you need to be involved in the community. If you're just at home, not doing much, and not contributing in writing or in person, it may be hard for people to get to know who you are, and we'll talk about website as well later on. But when I moved to Sonoma, in California, the wine country, back in 1988, I gave one lecture on fighting and loving with my friend Sam Keen. We kind of moved to the town together. We gave a lecture on fighting and loving. And, you know, how can you argue? Everybody can either love, fight, or do both. And so we want to teach them how to fight well, to argue well, so they can love well. And it was more than 100 people in this small town that came, because it's one of the topics that's taught. Ever since, I have a full private practice with a waiting list. So it took me 6-7 months. I did some other marketing efforts, but this one by itself, the fact that there was a brochure around town, the Dr. Zur talk about relationship, made me an expert, regardless whether I was an expert or not. So I was active. Whether you contribute to local causes, I'm going to do a presentation to some of the schools in my community about how to deal with internet addiction and with digital native and digital immigrants. And that is going to, I mean, not that I need more referrals, but this is definitely going to generate tons of referrals. And I do it in two local towns where I live here right now. So I'm visible as an expert. I am active on committees, if you may want to be active on committees, so people just know who you are in the education arena, in the health and medicine arena, even in the recreation, the Rotary clubs, whether you're involved in politics, you present yourself as an expert. We'll talk a little bit more about marketing in a few minutes. The last one of the successful therapist, you need to work on burnout. You need to diversify your activities and interests, do some kind of exercise, or Pilates, or yoga, take time off, and create balance between work and play, mind, body, spirit, between connection with God, with family, friends, or solitude, time offline, time online, time to be in nature, etc. So you need to find a way to balance your life in a healthy way. So let's now go to the million-dollar question. I want each participant to take 30 seconds. When you think about money, what is the first thing that comes to mind? Can people say or quickly type what is the first thing that comes to mind, Joe, and you can read it to me?
Fear, freedom, security, anxiety, poverty, not enough, don't have enough, going on vacation, options, lack of, art, fun, unlimited, I want a lot. Got a nice range.
People thought of excellent. This is one thing to do. For a lot of therapies, it's kind of it brings a lot of anxiety. We did not go to school to have a business administration degree. So we have this phobia about money, and we don't know how care and profit can be compatible. And it's a huge issue among therapists. My mother was a famous therapist in Israel, and she never charged for anybody. So she saw people in our living room never charge a penny from anybody. She was paid by the Ministry of Education. She was a professor in the University of Tel Aviv. Never charged. I remember that me charging $2 per session as an intern was a betrayal of my mother's vision of what therapy is about. And I felt guilty and betraying her legacy. And it took many years of therapy, really, to restructure and to rethink my relationship to money. So without a blink, I'll charge $200 an hour, and I feel it cheap. And so it requires some work about our relationship to money, because the way we started today about looking at the stock market is just an excuse. People don't have money. But, you know, talk to the pornographers and talk to the cosmetic industry and talk to the jewelry and clothing, women's clothing, and you see it's stupid, it's idiotic, and it's not true that people don't spend money. Even a time in recession, it hits harder houses. I don't want to minimize hardship, by no means. But therapists use recessions and other things just as an excuse to, instead of going and countering the relationship and facing on the relationship to money, which is not very healthy, and I was one of them that had to deal with my guilt about charging $2 an hour. Now I'm adding two zeros to that, and I feel just fine. Then the next question, I want people to ask themselves a part of the journey before even we go to marketing, before we can do a private practice, how and who and what shape your relationship to money, to profit, to wealth. So as I shared with you a second ago, it was my relationship to my idealistic mother and father, who was a union organizer. So I came from this highly socialistic family with care rather than money. This is what changed my relationship to money and profit. Profit is wrong, wealth is even worse, and money is dirty. This is where I came from. Without rejecting a lot of the values that I grew up with, I needed to change a lot of things. So I won't ask people to tell me the story of their life, but I want something to think of. So let's see a little bit about kind of do some calculation. Next. Let's say that you want $150,000 a year. It comes to about $1,250 a month. You work 20 hours a week, and you take 6 weeks vacation. Okay, so let's see what entails in doing that. And you're right, talking about lifestyle. I'm talking about here just some sample of my travel. The bottom right is where I was just last week. To the left of it is when my wife and I went to China after I taught in Singapore last year. 2 years earlier, I was on a glacier in Alaska, and 6 years ago, I climbed Kilimanjaro with my son and my adopted daughter. And so this is kind of about balanced life. Okay, so go back to the numbers. If you want $150,000 a year, and 20 hours a week, 6 weeks vacation, it comes to about $160 a session. However, you don't work for the whole time because we take vacation, and then we give some sessions for free, and sometimes with low fee scale as well. So let's say 2 sessions out of the 20 is free, 4 sessions at 70. The rest, in order to get 160 average, come to about 190 or $200. And everybody freaks out, 200 is too much, people will not pay, and you get into your neurotic self. So don't make excuses. Talk to Joe about your relationship to money. Talk to me about your relationship to money. Consult with me. Talk to your therapist. If the portfolio therapist is as bad as you are, perhaps there are issues of money. When it comes to fees, I remember Gary came to therapy. He signed the office policies at the end, never really asked about the money. At the end of the first session, he paid the $200 and went his own way and came to the next session. I got from his bio, I got the sense that he saw another therapist in town who's actually has done much more therapy than I am, more trained than I am. He's also a PhD, so I got permission to talk to the other therapist, and the other therapist and I talked. And he said, listen, after he gave me the clinical picture, one thing with Gary, it took us 3 months, he said, to set the fee. And Gary has huge issue with his money. And then how much did you end? He end up paying you? He said he end up paying me about $65 a session. So I couldn't wait to next time to meet Gary. I said, Gary, what happened? You paid $65 a session. It took you 3 months to set the fees. Did anything change about your life? You got the job? Did you win the lottery? You're paying me $200 without even questioning it. And Gary kind of shook his head and looked confused a little bit and surprised, and he told me, I never thought about it. What's the moral of the story?
Moral of the story sounds like you said, don't be neurotic about it. Charge what you really are worth, and the people will come.
People will come. So you are absolutely right. It wasn't about Gary. It was about the other therapist. And when he got to talk to me and he didn't see that I'm neurotic about it, and I feel I deserve the $200, he paid me $200. But when the other therapist yanked him around for 3 months to end up at 65. So it's how you exude, how do you present yourself. And you need to do some work on yourself. Or you can just lament with your excuses about economy, etc. But the pornographers and the cosmetic surgeries don't complain. They just charge. They do very well. When it comes to fees, I have some free articles online on my website. I have an online course for continuing education on fees. I have 130 courses on fees, so on 100 courses for continuing education, many of them on practice-related area. I don't deal with insurance. I state my fees in the office policies. I don't bring it up in the first call. Neurotic therapists who have this big issue with money will announce the fee even though the client didn't ask it. The client should know what the fee before the first session, but this is when we have the office policies. A few words about the office, that the office is a reflection of yourself. I won't take a dive into that. And what's important about the office is to see kind of what you choose to disclose. Let's move on so we have time at the end for questions. The first call, sometimes the first call is a do or die. The true do or dies right now for many therapists is a website and the first call. And I know, Joe, you're in good hands with you dealing with the website. I will attend to it a little bit, but I know you're done tremendous amount of work. And I was so impressed when I read your networker article talking about the importance of Facebook profile and page and stuff like that, when everybody is so neurotic about and not understanding the issue of confidentiality. You kind of go out of the box and start talking appropriately about internet marketing. And before we get there, the first call, be very personal in the first call. Take your time, listen well, don't rush, and be helpful. Give them advice. Give them some suggestions. Give them food for thought. Suggest some referrals. Follow up with an email. Be helpful in the first phone call. I have people whom I talk for about 10, 15 minutes. And the first call, get them a hard drive, and I didn't hear from them later on. And 5 years later, they'll say, listen, you were so helpful on the phone. Now I have a bigger issue. I want to come see you in therapy. Or tell a friend, this guy is really helpful. So don't rush the first call. It's sometimes you do or die. You need, in some regard, to show up about in the first call. When they ask me about managed care, I'll say, oh, no. I mean, being part of managed care, that means all your information is a big company computer, and it poses a potential danger to your future jobs, life insurance, health insurance. Nobody likes to hear that. It can compromise your privacy because everything on big company computer is can be exposed easily. Every hospital could drop out, they break into big company's computer. We don't have control of treatment, and I go on and on and on about managed care. I found it very easy to explain to people why what they can get for $20, even though it seems better than $200, there's a lot of risk and cost that comes with taking $20 copay rather than $200 out of pocket. But you need to be prepared with a good spiel about managed care. I have some articles online, an article page on this very issue, free articles on this issue. You need to know how to deal with managed care and the dangers that come with it.
Ofer, there's a question. How long do you usually spend on the first call?
Very 10 to 20 minutes.
Someone else asked, could you speak at some point on today's call about how to transition if you have an insurance-based practice and you want to transition to a fee-for-service practice?
Excellent question. You start doing kind of what you, Joe, teach you people and what I'm talking about today. And when the time comes, you say, I'm going to transition. You write a letter to the insurance company that you're going to get off the panel. You write letters to clients or talk to them, and you put it in your records that you decided not to work with insurance company or managed care because you find them immoral and you find them unethical, whatever you want to write in that. And give people a chance to transition. You may want to give referral, but you write this letter as a statement that is going as part of your marketing in some regard. So it has a dual purpose, inform consent, both to insurance and to clients, as well as you put it out. I know when I work with some people, the local paper put in a notification that this client is not working insurance company and give the reason for that. The media loves to harp on insurance company and managed care. So some people use this letter when I coach them on private practice. They use a letter as a marketing.
Do you have some links on your website discussing the dangers of managed care?
Yes. I have a whole brochure online.
Okay, good. And one other question. Someone asked, on your slide about mangled care, it says law quality. Was that a typo? It was supposed to be low quality?
Probably. I don't see what it is, but probably, yeah. I probably have a bunch of typos.
It says LAW quality, and they were wondering if it meant low quality. Okay.
Yeah, low quality. Again, the first call, be emotionally, morally. I would not be afraid to tell the woman, what? Did he push you? And you took it just like that? That's not cool. Did he say that? I said, no, I don't believe in that. I show up. The way I show up to your presentation right now, I show up in my first call. I sometimes tell stories about myself, and I give personal examples, so you get a sense of who I am. We need to move along here a little bit faster. Let's see kind of what else.
Okay.
Marketing. The essence of marketing is becoming an expert who can help people live better, happier, healthier, and longer. So an expert who can help are the two key issues. Everybody on this call will have a chance to look back at this PowerPoint, so I'm going to move a little bit faster here. People will pay for what they value. They are paying already, as I say, for car, clothes, for pornography, hairdressers, cosmetic surgery, acupuncture. We just don't know how to charge. People will pay if they value what they get from you, if they think that you are helpful and they like what they get. People will perceive you as experts who can help, and this is when they turn to you. So you show up, present yourself well in your marketing as well as in the first call, and you get referrals. How do you do marketing? You give free lecture if you are into lecture. Who doesn't need some help about love, about parenting, dealing with teens and drug abuse, dealing with internet use, how to balance life in a hurried time, because the internet and cyberbullying is huge right now. If you don't like to speak, you can just, in your privacy of your home, you write article to local newspapers. They love to get something intelligent about local events. There was a rape one time in the community where I live, so I did a series of articles and public forums, actually, about rape prevention, or domestic violence, cyberbullying, different kind of bullying. So you involve yourself, whether it's through articles in the paper, through interviews in the radio, or through presentation, whatever makes you comfortable, but you present yourself to the community as an expert. And then another form of marketing is you approach people how you can help them. There's no one school counselor doesn't need some help from counselors on the outside. You talk to priests, so they have divorces in the congregation, or rabbis, and it breaks the congregation apart. You help them work with couples who how to do divorce with integrity. Local physicians are sometimes referring to me because I'm outside of panel. They don't get penalized by managed care for referrals. It's a complicated idea, but it's working for me for now 25 years. Talk to the education director of the Rotary Club. Give free speeches for the ER people about schizophrenia, bipolar, etc., suicidality. Give free speeches for the police about burnout. Let's now talk. We cannot go through today without what you've been focusing on a lot, Joe, is ML, about a website. This day and age, 21st century, you need to create a helpful, pleasant, and personal website that reflects your taste, style, and value. So whether part of your marketing plan must be a website. If you don't know how to do a website, you contact Joe. My daughter is kind of involved in helping therapists right now. By the way, the online marketing manual will not be available for another 2 weeks. It has been some of the promotional material, so my daughter and I are just finishing it. What's important about the website? You cover a lot of these things, Joe, and you work with the audience, yeah?
Yes.
Who listens? Yeah. But I'll reiterate, Joe, you can interrupt me or correct me. Business legitimacy is what website is about. Modern day consumer Google you before they call you. Everybody has a website. Plumbers, physicians, psychic, trainers, gardeners. Everybody has a web presence. People get to your website in a variety of ways. They may Google you, or they may find your website after they got referred to you. So even when they get referred to you or heard about you, before they see you, modern-day consumers will go to the website and check you out. Joe, you agree with me on that?
Definitely. Yeah, we've been hearing, I've heard more stories lately for even people getting a personal referral from another client, and then they'll say, well, let me check your website out first anyway, and if they don't have one, they won't come.
Absolutely. So even when a client is a friend, which is a number one source of referral
right.
in general, they'll still check your website first.
Right.
If you don't have a website, talk to Joe, talk to my daughter, or just hire a high school dropout that can do it for you in half an hour. What in the website? Homepage, contact me about the personal mission statement about philosophy of treatment. You can go to my website and check my philosophy of treatment and my thought about managed care if I'm showing up. Introductory audio or video very helpful this day and age. Excellent resources pages and links to Facebook, blog, Twitter, YouTube, and social networking on the homepage. Again, Joe, you do so much good work about it, but I'll give my 2 cents here.
Sure.
On the homepage, photo, Basic license, short statement of who you are. They get a sense of who you are, services you provide, menu to the other parts of the website, and short audio and video. It can be very short, but it's human and it's personal. Avoid on your website too much flash on animation, long statement of bragging, testimonial. Testimonials of clients are unethical. We're not allowed to solicit them, so don't do that. It shouldn't be too complicated. The code of ethics said we are not supposed to solicit them. Some people argue better whether to post it or not. I'm on the cautious side. Forget about how to create a website. Joe, you'll do more work with them. What's important on a website is there is transparency. Modern day consumers expect to learn who you are, what are the values, what are your approaches. It's beyond degree and how much you charge and where is your office and your orientation. They want to know much more about you. The fact that I climbed Kilimanjaro means a lot for people for some reason. There's a myth about it. So you present something personal. Modern day consumer expect to get information from your website. So be helpful. The resource page should not just be a link to general sites like APA or NASW or CAMP. It should be much more specific. 10 ways to beat the holidays blues, 21 days to increase your quality of your relationship, how to deal with online sex and infidelity, blah, blah, blah. It has to give good, helpful resources, not just general. And again, it's very, very simple to do. Social networking, just make sure that your website is a social networking campaign is part of your marketing tool. Talk to Joe, talk to my daughter about it. So is blogging. Blogging can be a fantastic way to express your ideas, your expertise, but it's also as fantastic way to do marketing. Joe, you agree with me?
Yes. Definitely.
Okay. More web marketing. Learn about SEO. Track your progress. Use Google Analytics. I don't, but I have people who use it for me. Sign up for Google Alerts. And then my claim to fame is around flexibility. And it's very important if you do fee-for-service, as I said, you know, do the home office. Play basketball with clients if necessary. Go for a walk. Accept gifts. All of the issues of boundaries. I have tons of articles and online courses on issues of gift and home visits, your relationship, email with clients, learn how to do text with clients. Sometimes the only way to reach teenagers is via texting. Don't be rigid about it. Don't practice risk management. Risk management is really put you in a higher risk unless you can do ethical risk management. And ethical risk management is do what's helpful, not acting out of fear. Many of the ethics workshops that you took are just campaign of fear. And there are so many of them are giving you misinformation because there's a way to do a relationship is unavoidable in small towns. Email with clients is not unethical. It can be very appropriate. You don't always need a diagnosis to do treatment. You can do it with a focus of treatment, intermittent long-term. Texting with clients can save lives. Phone therapy can be very effective. Be flexible. Use touch appropriately. Many times, much more effective than all the words in the world. The other thing, besides flexibility and marketing plan, is really, as I mentioned earlier, go beyond the DSM. When people come with me to depression, I talk about the existential funk. If you need to know more about it, go to Positive Psychology Existential site. I'm talking about issues of the community as a basis for people's alienation rather than internal pathology. I'm talking to people about issues of meaning and loneliness, mortality and freedom, the hallmark of existential side. And they don't come to me because they are broken. They come to me because they want to live with a higher quality of life. And I train them. At the beginning, the things have to be broken to come see me. But later on, it's changing. Then there's a whole new field that's relevant that we will not cover today. I just put a slide so you know the digital ethics. I have bunch of articles about it. I have an 8 continuing education credit course on digital ethics. One of the things that you need to know is how to deal with self-disclosure, even if you don't have a website. Clients Googling us and finding us, a lot of information about us. Is it okay to Google client? Won't have time to go into that, but it's a huge field. And, of course, Joe, you deal with some of these issues about Facebook and Facebook friends, and we won't have a chance to talk about it. It's a topic for another webinar. If you feel like we can do digital ethics, Joe. I mean, it's a hot issue.
Sure.
I gave you here the links in the last slide to free articles, tons of them on many of the issues we discussed today, 130 online courses, and I have private practice material. I have clinical forms, including office policies and many other forms in my online catalog, and you get a 10% discount code if you put UCP88. UCP stands for Uncommon Practices. Joe and Mel's fantastic work, so in acknowledgement of that, 10% discount. Now open to questions. We have until what time do we have, Joe?
We have about 10 more minutes, so if anyone wants to ask a question on the phone, hit *6 on your phone. Here's a question. How do you balance commitment to ensuring access to low-income individuals with what you're talking about by having, you know, your full fee?
I mentioned before, if you have 20 people, if you go back to the slide, there are 2 people that I see for free.
Right.
And 4 people that I see for low fee. So I have a commitment, always a commitment to work people with low fee. I don't do personally sliding scale. I find it very, very hard. People say they don't have money, and what happened if they start getting to inheritance, or they sold the house, or some kind of investment matured. I found it very messy to work on a sliding scale. So I end up with people who kind of lost their job. I'll reduce their fee. And I always have people that see for no fee at all. And people, I mean, I can have a commitment for no fee, but also have a commitment to average 160, and I balance it for 20 hours a week therapy.
Ofer, how about testimonials? What's your position on testimonials on a website, someone asked?
You know, I'm not good at that. I like to show up. I prefer if I have space on a website to put a statement of what I believe in, or to put an audio or a video rather than testimonial. I personally just have an aversion for that, but I think it can be very effective for some people. People using it, it must be working. I'm not good at that.
Also, do you do follow-up calls with patients to see how they're doing in between, you know, when they're not coming to therapy?
Like after the terminated?
Yes.
In between? I don't initiate a call. No, absolutely not. I find it highly intrusive if clients kind of in between or terminated in between sessions of intermittent long-term. I won't call them on my own. This is a nowhere to reach me, and I won't do that. But in between sessions, you know, ongoing therapy, oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness, yeah. I'll have follow-up in between. Absolutely.
In ongoing
therapy when I'm engaged with my client.
Okay, someone has a question on the phone?
Yes. Could you just state briefly how you use Facebook as a part of your practice? That seems so public
Facebook,
to me.
Facebook, you need to know the difference between Facebook profile, which is personal and private, and between Facebook page, which is a marketing tool. And so we are going to have our online marketing guide out probably in a week or two. So check with our website. Meanwhile, Joe can also talk about this one at length. He knows tons of stuff about it.
Yeah, let me just say one quick thing, Ofer. The personal profile and the business page are totally independent. And if you're not using Facebook for personal reasons or social reasons, you can even fill out the personal profile with your office address, and then there's really no issue in terms of privacy. But if you are, be sure to check the privacy settings on Facebook because they change frequently. And I don't ever trust what Facebook says about privacy, so assume people will see what's on there.
Beautiful. Everything you write on the website, anything you write on the web, just treat it as tattooed on your forehead on the front page of the New York Times. So, Joe is absolutely right. The privacy is questionable. Nevertheless, you separate your private profile by working on the privacy on the setting, and if you don't know how to do it, just get a high school dropout, go through the school hours on the street, see who is not at school, and they can help you, or get an expert like Joe, my daughter, and separate the profile from the page and use a page as part of your marketing tool. Very important. Able to use it. You don't need to know how to do it yourself. I don't do it myself. My daughter does it for me.
Thank you.
More questions, Joe?
Yeah, here's a question. The MFT organization in California says that you have to disclose your fees in advance, give notice, you know, before the first session, and you're saying you tend to not do that?
I said it very clearly that my fees are in the informed consent and office policies that everybody gets before the first session. Need to announce it in the first call unless I'm being asked to bring it up. So there is nothing wrong in not saying it in the phone session, and everybody tells you differently. It's just a risk management fear campaign. But they have to be notified, but does not need to be through the phone. Necessarily, it can be through the office policy, informed consent. If you don't have one, get my 61 essential clinical forms right after this call. You need to have an informed consent, the client signing at the beginning, in my case, most of the time, before the first session. So, yes, Kempf is right, but it does not mean that you need to discuss it on the phone. Some people get insulted. I sometimes talk to somebody and my fee is, and he snapped back at me, I didn't ask you for my fee, I can afford you. You got insulted. Rich people are insulted sometimes when you bring it up. One more comment about private practice. Unless you work in special setting, you don't need to have the 911 in the outgoing message. Millions of people, probably thousands of people over the years, I called them back and I said, you have reached the office of Joe Schmo, and please leave your name and number after the sound of the beep, and if it's an emergency, call 911. You don't need to have it unless you work with suicidal people, you work with a certain population, or it's mandated by your organization. Because that gives people the sense that you work with people who are on the way to the bridge. And that's not what lucrative private practice is usually about. If I want to talk to people the meaning of life, or love and relationship and parenting, they don't need to hear this on the way to the bridge through a suicidality 911 business. Leave it out. It belongs in the signature and the email. It belongs perhaps in the office policies. It does not need to be in the outgoing message. It's another legacy of the fear campaign by attorneys and SFS who just run on fear rather than on care.
Right. Okay, one last question. Are you saying not to put your fees on your website?
I say put it or not put it. It doesn't need to be upfront. Show up first. It's okay to have it there if you choose to. I don't.
Yep.
But it has to be in the office policies. But this is your comfort zone. It shouldn't be upfront. It should like you first, appreciate you first, get to know you first before they get to the fee. Don't take a stand on that. It's personal. Wow, we covered a lot, Joe.
We covered a lot. And for everyone who's listening, I'll be sending out a link on Monday, which will be a PDF of the entire PowerPoint and a recording of the whole audio. So if you had trouble hearing and you want to clarify some of the information, you'll have every word that was on the slides and every word that was said on this last 60 minutes. So I want to thank Dr. Zur for his time and expertise. He's been a real pioneer in the field, one of the most prolific writers in the field of private practice and psychology. And please go to zurinstitute.com. It's a wealth of great information. And I would also recommend you also subscribe to his clinical update, which is a free newsletter. How often does that come out, Ofer?
Every couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a fantastic newsletter with his views of all the changing fields of digital ethics, clinical issues, technology. I think it's one of the most valuable newsletters I've ever read in our field. So thank you again, and thank you all for joining and your great questions. And as I said, look for the link on Monday. And we wish you all the best of success in creating your fee-for-service practice.
Joe, you have been fantastic. You know, I feel like almost you took the torch and ran with that in such a wonderful way, Joe.
Good.
Like, you're really ushering us due to the 21st century in a most wonderful, wonderful way. So thank you and Mel.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Oprah. You did a great job, by the way.
You know, you guys are fantastic, and we need people like you, and we have very, very few, and you are pioneering kind of what I feel when I started many years ago, now taking me to the digital age. So thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye. Okay. Okay, bye.